The modest Comanche camp was well hidden in a hollow where its fires were unlikely to be seen unless someone came directly upon them. It consisted of a few buffalo hide teepees, smaller than those used in long-term camps. And he was the subject of intense scrutiny and some open expressions of hostility until he spoke in the Comanche language. As he explained the circumstances that caused him to spend several of his boyhood years among the people, he sensed a positive change.
Yes, I want a receipt from my stuff.
If I had known you were here, I would have brought meat into camp.
He had seen several antelopes scattered to graze, watching him with curiosity, then flashing white rumps as they turned and fled. They would run a short distance, then stop to see if he was following. Finally, they would cut in front of him and disappear over a hill.
We have antelope, but we had hoped for buffalo,
and he could only express condolences. He smoked with them and listened to their unhappy talk about life on the reservation. They spoke longingly of better times when buffalo had been plentiful, before soldiers and government agents ruled their lives.
Did anyone see a white woman traveling alone?
We saw her. We did not allow her to see us.
That is good. She might have shot at you.
With Luther Fleet, she had demonstrated her ability to use a gun.
We feared she would bring the soldiers. Is she your woman?
No. I follow her because I need to find her husband. He has killed a man.
The people kill our enemies, but we do not kill our brothers. The white man kills whoever stands in his way.
Most don't. Those who do must accept punishment. It is my work to find them and bring them in.
You are like a soldier, but you do not wear the blue.
I am not a soldier. I am a ranger.
The old horseback warriors knew the rangers from bitter encounters and shedding of blood by both sides.
Many times I have fought them. How can you be of the people, yet be one of those?
All things change. Now the people and the whites are friends.
Only if we do what they tell us and stay where they put us.
It is a hard thing to live under the Taibo's rule and call him friend. He spoke of the whiskey peddlers, bringing with them degradation and despair. He spoke of horse thieves who raided the Ramudas and drove away the best of the people's mounts. And he shared antelope stew with the Comanches. These were not of any band he had known, though they recognized a few names he asked about. He was careful not to mention anyone he knew to have died. There was a taboo against speaking names of the dead. He took a chance and asked about Steedles the Ponies, who had been like a brother to him. The elder's eyes clouded with sadness.
He lives, but he is sick of spirit. He has lost the one who was his wife. His son does not follow the old ways. He talks of going to the government school and becoming like the white man. It is hard for a boy to become a man now. He has no enemies to fight, no buffalo to hunt. They have taken all of that from us. They are trying to make us all women.
Andy could only nod, for he had no argument to counter what the elder said. Someday, he thought, he should take time off and go to the reservation to seek out Steeles the Ponies and whatever others remained of those he had known. But it would not be a happy reunion. It would be more like a funeral. As night fell and the fires died down, the Indians repaired to their teepees. They did not post a guard. Andy had long recognized this as a regrettable weakness that on occasion brought disaster to them at the hands of their enemies. He rolled out his blanket and slept in the open. Once in the night, he thought he heard a stirring of hooves. It didn't happen again. He decided it had been caused by a couple of the Indian horses staked beside their master's teepees. As first light spread across the rolling plains, he saw horsemen surrounding the camp. One glance told him they were soldiers waiting for the Comanches to arise. That happened quickly as alarm swept like a whirlwind through the camp. Andy pulled on his boots and hat and walked out toward the nearest men. Several rifles were pointed at him.
No need to shoot. I'm white.
The lieutenant pulled his horse in front of the others, stopping just short of where Andy stood.
What are you doing with these Indians?
I happened across them late yesterday. I stayed the night with them.
Man, don't you realize how dangerous that was? You're lucky you still have your hair.
There's nothing dangerous about these people. They're just hungry and hunting for meat. They don't get enough on the reservation.
How do you know?
They told me.
Told you? How could you understand their language?
I lived with them when I was a boy.
And you just happened to cross them? You weren't waiting here to sell them whiskey?
I wouldn't do that for all the money in Texas. Whiskey has been their ruination.
We best take you back with us to the fort. You can plead your case to a higher authority than me.
I'm a Texas Ranger on official business.
He took the hidden badge from his shirt pocket.
My name is Andy Pickard.
I thought Rangers were supposed to shoot Indians on sight, not camp with them.
That was a long time ago. Things are different now.
Not all that much. What's your business here?
I've been trailing a woman whose husband is a fugitive. I hope she'll lead me to him.
What do these Indians have to do with it?
We just happened to cross paths.
Then you'll have no objections if we take them back to the reservation where they belong.
Objections? Hell yes, I've got objections, but I've no authority to do anything about it. I just hope you'll treat them decent. Try to look at the situation through their eyes.
The officer looked as if his stomach ached.
I have to look at it every day. Frankly, I don't like it any better than you do, but I'm just a shavetail. The powers that be don't listen to second lieutenants.
He gave a signal to the soldiers to start gathering the Indians.
Who's this man you're looking for?
His name is Donnelly Bannister. He killed a man down at Junction.
Bannister. I know that name. As a matter of fact, we've been looking for him too. He's part of a horse-stealing ring that operates on the reservations and up into Kansas.
Somehow that was not a big surprise to Andy.
Down south, he's known as a horse trader, but not as a thief.
Where do you think he gets the horses to trade?
The lieutenant watched as the Indians finished gathering their scant belongings and mounted their horses.
By the way, we've been advised to watch out for a black soldier who murdered a man at Santa Angela. The authorities believe he came up this way. By any chance, have you come across such a man?
I was in Santa Angela when it happened. I haven't seen him since.
We'd like to find him before some lynch mob does.
The outcome will be the same, won't it?
Hanging? Yes, but the army will do it with some civility.
Civility. Andy shook his head. No matter who did it, there would be no civility about it. Flanked by the soldiers, the Indians began to move. Andy saddled his horse and rode up beside the elder.
I am sorry, Uncle.
Sadness dulled the old Comanche's eyes. Nothing is like we knew it before. This land is no longer home. The reservation is not home. For the people, there is no home anywhere. Andy wished he could say something to bring comfort, but any such words would sound hollow and false. And it was not in him to lie to this old man. This is no life for one who has hunted his own meat and fought his own battles. This is a slow death, and we die without pride. Andy turned away from the column. Watching the Indians move east with the soldiers, Andy allowed scenes and sounds from his boyhood to drift through his mind. For a few moments, he lived in the past. His throat swelled in grief for what had been and would never be again. He turned away and rode west, hoping to come across the tracks of Geneva's buggy. The black horse was wearing down, and so was Andy. But he was not yet ready to give up the search, though it had begun to appear a lost effort. He hoped to find a ranch where he might borrow, trade, or buy a fresh mount. The little pack mule showed no signs of giving out, but a rest would be helpful for it, too. He had seen cattle, most bearing the look of longhorns brought up out of South Texas. Many ranches on the lower and high plains were stocking up with cow herds from the brush country below San Antonio. Some, showing English blood, were coming down from Colorado now that the buffalo slaughter had opened the range for cattle operations and the Indian troubles were over.
This sure is good-looking ranch land.
But Andy already had his sights set on land far to the south, in the hill country. He saw a wooden windmill tower and reined in that direction. He found that it served what appeared to be a ranch headquarters. A box-and-strip house stood surrounded by scrub oak trees common to the Cross Timbers area. Beyond it stretched a long building he took to be a bunkhouse. Barns, sheds, and corrals were set off at a respectable distance. A ranch wife would want her house to be well away from the outdoor facility's flies and dust. Three men were in a corral breaking a young horse. Andy rode up to the fence and watched a cowboy hold the bronc by the ears while another swung into the saddle and pulled his hat down tight. The bronc pitched out across the corral.
You got it,
the rider lost one stirrup and flopped about wildly as the horse jumped. The cowboy took a firm hold on the saddle horn and managed to keep his seat. Sweating, Bronk circled the corral several times, gradually slowing as it went around. Finally, it stopped, heaving for breath. The cowboy dismounted and quickly stepped away to avoid being kicked. Only then did the three notice Andy. The Bronc rider, a man with a salt-and-pepper beard, walked toward the fence, acknowledging him with a neutral nod, neither friendly nor unfriendly.
Howdy. I don't believe I know you.
Name's Andy Pickard. You the boss?
Nope. She's up at the house fixing dinner. Well, I do. My name's Ben Danforth.
Andy dismounted and shook hands through the fence.
I'm a Texas Ranger. My horse is about ridden down. I was hoping I might be able to swap for a fresh one.
The rancher nodded.
It can be done, but I wish you'd come yesterday. You'd have more to pick from. Thieves ran off with a bunch of our horses last night. Some of my boys are out now scouting around and hoping to find them.
You have a lot of trouble with horse thieves?
They're worse than heel flies. They steal cattle, too, but they seem to like horses best. They can get away with them faster.
His eyes took on a hopeful look.
By chance, are you on their trail?
I've been following a woman, hoping she'd lead me to her husband. I don't know for sure that he's a thief, but he's wanted on a murder charge.
Has he got a name?
Donnelly Bannister.
Then you're looking for a horse thief. Every ranch around here knows his name, but not many have seen his face. Most of us would walk 10 miles barefooted to see him hang.
Andy took a minute to digest that. He had heard from the army lieutenant that Bannister stole horses, so he was not exactly surprised. It disappointed him, nevertheless. He wondered if Geneva Bannister knew about this part of her husband's life. Though he would like to think she didn't, she would have to be naive not to harbor some suspicions. The three cowboys turned the Bronc into a pen, where it went immediately to a wooden water trough serviced by the windmill.
That'll do till after dinner, boys!
Danforth turned to Andy.
Come on up to the house with me. The wife will be ringing the noon bell pretty soon.
Danforth walked out of the corral and made a long study of Andy's horse.
Pretty good-looking animal. I don't know if we've got anything that'll be a fair swap for you. Tell you what. I'll make you a trade with the agreement that you can always trade back once your horse is rested up and taken on some feed.
Well, that's more than fair.
Mrs. Danforth was a plump little woman with her graying hair rolled up in a bun and a smudge of white flour across her nose. She bustled around her simple kitchen with the energy of a bumblebee.
Glad to have you, Ranger. We don't see much law around here except what our men folk handle for themselves. I don't guess people back east would approve of how they enforce the law, but if they don't do it, it doesn't get done.
There are times when we have to make a quick judgment and strike while the iron's hot. The law and the courts are too slow and too far away. If we don't take care of things ourselves, the lawless element runs over us.
You're talking about vigilantes.
Call them what you want to, but sometimes they're the only law enforcement we've got.
Andy had seen examples of quick justice without benefit of a judge. It went against his grain, yet he could see the Danforth's viewpoint. A situation always looked different to a victim than to an outside observer who'd experienced no pain.
I don't suppose you've run into a rancher named J. Farrell Vanderpool?
I don't believe I have.
Well, once we get some of these northern counties organized, he'll probably be elected a judge. He's already pronounced sentence on several renegades, and no pettifogging lawyer's got a chance to muddy the waters.
Andy thought of an old legal adage, there is no appeal from the graveyard. The boys came to the house. Mrs. Danforth went to the door to count heads.
Now, boys, slap off the trail dust before you come in and wash up here on the porch. I won't have dirty hands at my table.
They paused outside to wash their hands and faces and comb their hair. This was not a bunkhouse cook shack. It was a woman's kitchen. She expected civilized behavior.
Now, before you dig in, let's remember where this bounty came from. For what we are about to receive, may the good Lord make us truly thankful.
Amen.
I've cooked for everybody. When are the rest of the boys coming in?
As they all helped themselves, her husband spooned a generous amount of white gravy over his fried steak and buttered a hot biscuit.
We won't know till they show up.
They finished the noon meal. Saying they had another Bronc to ride, the two cowboys returned to the corral. Danforth seated himself in a rocking chair on the front porch and motioned for Andy to sit, too. Danforth lit a pipe.
You've been up in this part of country much, Ranger?
Andy had not burdened him with the story of his years among the Comanches.
Yeah, a long time ago.
I can see why the Indians don't want to give it up. If the criminal element didn't pester us like horseflies, this would be a grand place for a rancher. Good grass, good water, even if sometimes you have to dig a hole for it. Hot in the summer, maybe, and a little cold in the winter. But show me any place that's perfect.
Andy felt at ease sitting here with Danforth. For a little while, he put Donnelly Bannister out of his mind.
I've always wanted to have a ranch someday. I will, when I've saved enough money.
You'll need a good wife.
I already got her. She's waiting for me down at Fort McCavitt.
Don't let her wait too long. One day you're young and frisky and you can do anything. Next day you look in the mirror and your hair's turning gray. Takes you twice as long to do half of what you used to.
From the corner of his eye, Andy caught a movement. Three horsemen were coming in from the north, pushing their mounts. They circled around the corrals and stirred dust, riding up to the house. Danforth pushed to his feet and walked down the steps to meet them.
Find anything?
Sure did. We found the thieves' camp hidden in a draw about 7 or 8 miles from here. They've rigged up a brush corral. Got a dozen or 15 horses in it. And most of them ours.
Andy noticed how the cowboy referred to the horses as ours, though in reality they probably belonged to Danforth. Cowboys tended to take a proprietary interest in animals owned by whomever they worked for, caring for them as if they were their own. Danforth knocked the ashes out of his pipe and turned to Andy.
Got time to chase some horse thieves?
I'll take the time.
Mrs. Danforth came out onto the porch, drying her hands on a dish towel.
Now, Ben, you be careful. Don't you get any of our boys hurt. No horse is worth that. You bring them all back, safe and sound.
The cowboys hustled off to catch fresh horses from among nearly a dozen that had been placed in a corral as a protection against theft. Danforth pointed out a sorrel for Andy.
Not the prettiest one in the pen, but he'll take you a long ways and bring you back.
Andy saddled the sorrel, then joined Danforth and his men. The cowboy who brought the report took the lead. They left the corrals at a trot, then moved into an easy lope as their horses warmed up. Finally, Andy felt exhilarated after the monotony and frustration of trying to follow Geneva Bannister's buggy. The jolting brought pain to his healing shoulder, but he made up his mind not to let it slow him. The men alternated between a trot and a lope. Late in the afternoon, the cowboy in the lead raised his hand. The other riders stopped and circled around him.
The draw's just past that hill yonder. How do you want to handle this, Mr. Danforth?
Danforth looked at Andy.
My old cavalry captain always believed in charging right in amongst them. Throw them off balance before they have time to think about it.
I've got no quarrel with that.
Danforth had left the corrals in a high state of enthusiasm, but now his face was grim.
We'll form a line and sweep down on them in a run. Holler like rebels. If we can stampede their horses and set the thieves afoot, they'll be easy pickings. Keep yourselves low. I don't want to explain to Mrs. Danforth why I let one of you get killed.
They rode up on a rise and reined in. Below, a brushy draw, 100 yards wide, crooked its way among the rolling hills. Andy saw campfire smoke rising from the middle of it. Beyond, he spotted a dozen or more horses standing in a crudely thrown together corral of cut brush. Danforth led the charge. The cowboys struggled to keep up, holding a ragged line as they plunged into the camp. A man on a dun horse spurred out of the draw and galloped away, leaning over his saddle horn, lashing the mount's hindquarters with a quirt. Two men seemed momentarily frozen in surprise beside the campfire. Afoot, they ran futilely toward their stampeding horses, then fired wildly at the oncoming riders. Andy concentrated on the man who was escaping. Remembering the Donnelly Bannister road had done, he vigorously applied spurs to the sorrel. Yeah! He soon saw that it was not going to be enough. Danforth spoke about the sorrel's endurance, but said nothing about its speed. The dun was faster, quickly widening its lead. Andy drew the rifle from its scabbard, stopped the sorrel, and stepped down. He knelt and drew a bead. He missed. The range was too great.
Damn!
The rider had gotten away. Remounting, Andy returned to the camp. The stolen horses had broken through the brush barrier. Three of Danforth's cowboys were circling, gathering them up. Danforth and the other two stood in the middle of the camp. One man lay on the ground. He was not one of the cowboys, so Andy surmised that he was a thief. Another man stood trembling, his hands raised.
You got us all wrong! We don't know nothing about no stolen horses!
You lie. Most of the horses penned here belong to me.
Me and Speck, we just rode in. We don't know nothing about them.
Speck. Hearing that name made Andy take a better look at the man on the ground, then at the one standing. They were the two he encountered along with Bannister in the dugout. The one called Chess had put a bullet through Andy's shoulder. The man on the ground was unconscious. In rhythm with his heartbeat, blood pumped through a hole in his chest. It was obvious that he was dying. Andy turned to the man on his feet.
I know you. Your partner called you Chess. If it hadn't been for Donnelly Bannister, you'd have killed me.
You're that ranger?
I am. Who's the man who left here on horseback just now?
You ought to recognize him. If it hadn't been for him, you wouldn't be standing here now.
That was Bannister?
Yes, damn him. He ran off and left us. I hope you get him.
I will sooner or later.
One of the cowboys knelt beside the fallen man.
He's dead, Mr. Danforth.
Wages of sin.
Danforth's eyes smoldered with threat as he gave his attention to the surviving thief.
There's bound to be a bigger and better camp someplace. You want to tell me where it is?
If it was just Bannister, I would. But I ain't going to inform on anybody else.
So there's more. We're dealing with a ring of thieves.
The three cowboys had circled the stolen horses and brought them up. Danforth looked them over with satisfaction.
Take them on back to the ranch, boys. We'll be along directly.
The ranchman turned to Andy.
There's a bay in that bunch that'll do you a better job than that sorrel you're riding. Why don't you go on with the horses? Me and a couple of my boys have got a job to do here.
Andy sensed what that was. He saw by the fear in Chess's face that he sensed it, too.
It'd be better if you turned him over to the local law.
We would if there was any local law. The courts are too far away, and like as not, he'd be on the loose again in no time. Maybe in a few years, it'll be different.
Andy could assert his authority and take the prisoner, but that would interfere with his search for Donnelly Bannister. At the moment, Bannister was the bigger fish. Andy spurred to catch up with the cowboys driving the horses. It was cold justice, but justice nevertheless. It was obvious to Geneva that Quincy Harp tended to his horse's welfare better than to his own. After wasting much time crisscrossing the hills in what seemed a hopeless search, she found Harp's place many miles away from any recognizable road. The layout included an extensive set of sturdy horse corrals, but the picket cabin looked like a wreck ready to happen any minute. Its walls were off plumb and leaned dangerously away from the prevailing winds. She guessed that it originally went up as a buffalo hunter's camp without regard to permanence. A letter from Harp had set her off on the long search for Donnelly Bannister. It assured her that her husband was in good health and hard at work. It had also said he wanted her to wait in Junction. Under no circumstances was she to follow him. She chose to anyway. It was in her nature to obey orders only when they suited her. A heavy lump of a man stood on the front step, a rifle in his hand, watching the approach of Geneva's buggy. His wide mouth curved downward in a hostile scowl. She pulled back on the reins.
Who the hell are you and why have you come here?
I'm Geneva Bannister. I've come to join my husband.
Harp took a step forward. His belligerence made her want to shrink from him, but stubbornness allowed her no retreat.
Didn't you get the letter?
I got it, but my place is beside my husband.
Ain't no telling who might have followed you here.
Nobody followed me. I've been careful.
A large boned woman, handsome in a rough-hewn way, stepped out of the house and stood beside Harp. Her long black hair lifted and fell carelessly in the wind.
Did I hear you claim to be Donnelly's wife?
I am. Is he here?
No, and I don't know when he's liable to show up. Best thing for you would be to spin around and go back where you came from.
I've come too far to go back.
Donnelly said you were supposed to stay put. Didn't you read the letter I wrote for him?
I thought your husband wrote it.
Oh, he can't hardly write his own name. And whoever said he's my husband?
Well, I just assumed...
Things here are different than you're used to. This ain't exactly a church encampment. Well, since you come, anyway...
She turned on Harp.
How come you're standing there looking like a fence post? Help her down. She's probably hungry.
She can't stay here.
She stays if I say so. And I say so. Now go put her buggy away. You can bring her things in later.
Harp did as he was told, and Geneva followed the woman inside.
I want to go wherever my husband is.
God knows where he's at right now. Could be over in Indian Territory or north, as far as the Nebraska line. He don't let moss grow on him. Sit down and I'll fix you something to eat. You're looking kind of lank. We need to fatten you up a little before Donnelly gets back.
Meals have been a little skimpy on the road.
My name's Emmy. Just Emmy. Used to have a last name, but after two husbands, I gave up using it.
She busied herself with a cast-iron stove.
Can't say I blame you too much for following after Donnelly, even though he told you not to. He's considerable of a man. Wished he was mine instead of the one I got. You must be some woman for him to slip a ring on your finger. You must have put a hex on him.
I didn't do anything special. We met, and things just naturally happened.
Emmy sensed Geneva's discomfort.
I don't mean to be a prying nuisance. It's just that I've been curious about what you've got that's taken such a powerful hold on Donley. It's hard to keep a stud horse in one pasture when there's mares across the fence. Yet I've never known him to pay attention to another woman. Quincy! Go fetch me some more firewood! Damned if you ain't let the wood box get nearly empty!
Why does he let you order him around like that?
He likes my cooking. Quincy's got no hold on me, nor me on him. We stay together because it's convenient. I do the cooking and keep the house. He takes care of business and brings in the money. A little bit, anyway.
What kind of business?
I figured you knew. Horses. They gather them here, and Donley takes them down south where nobody knows the brands. Small investment, big profit.
Geneva wondered that she felt no resentment.
You're implying that Donley's involved in stealing horses.
Geneva had accepted Donley's easy explanation for lengthy absences, that he was traveling far to buy horses for trading. She had loyally avoided dwelling on the possibility that he was stealing them, though an inner voice nagged her for some time that everything didn't add up.
I ain't implying nothing, honey. I'm telling you straight. Donley may be a Bible-quoting Puritan on some things, but he's got no compunctions about taking other men's horses.
Did he tell you he's wanted for killing a man?
Yeah. Them Slocums have operated up in this country some. All of them need killing. If Donley hadn't done it, the law'd have to sooner or later. He saved him the trouble.
Most people back there say he was justified, that a jury would clear him. I came all this way to talk him into going home and getting it over with.
You can't be sure about a jury. Trusting in a jury is how I lost my first husband. They hung him higher than the Confederate flag.
Oh, that's terrible.
And they done it after we slipped them $10 apiece to turn him loose. Crooks, a whole bunch of them.
Harp tromped into the house with an armload of wood.
When you going to get my dinner fixed?
I'm busy taking care of Geneva. You'll have to finish filling the wood box before I cook anything for you.
Wood box, I'm hungry.
Men, you got to keep jerking them up short. Otherwise, they get the notion that they're in charge.
Oh, thank you.
Geneva ate what Emmy placed in front of her. She was not sure what it was, but she was hungry enough not to ask questions.
You'd best give up any notion of hunting for Donley. Stay here with us and wait. He'll show up sooner or later, bring a bunch of horses.
Quincy may object to my being in the way.
He objects to just about everything. Don't pay no attention to him. I don't.
I can pay for my keep. A man named Luther Fleet was in debt to Donley. I collected it from him.
Luther Fleet? That four-flusher is in debt to just about everybody. How'd you get him to pay?
I shot him.
Dead, I hope.
I just put a bullet in his leg.
Emmy's eyes brightened with admiration.
I don't know what Donley ever did to deserve you, honey. You're welcome to stay here as long as you want to, and Quincy be damned.
Maybe a little while, till Donley comes, or we hear where he is. I'll pay my way.
Hang on to your money. You earned it, fair and square.
The cabin was cramped and uncomfortable, but it offered rest and relief to Geneva after the grinding physical demands of the long buggy trip. In a day or so, she settled into Emmy's routine, helping to keep the house and cook the meals. Nights, the horses being accumulated for trading were penned to keep them from straying or being stolen by a different set of thieves. Days, Harp let them out of the corral to graze so they would hold their flesh and strength. He rode out occasionally to prevent them from drifting too far. The rest of the time, he mostly loafed around the cabin or the barn, eating and drinking, grousing about one thing or another. Very little seemed to please him. Harp made no effort to hide his resentment of Geneva. Her being here relegated him to sleeping in the barn. Whatever romance he was able to wheedle from Emmy was inconvenient and on her own terms. At best, the pair's relationship was an uneasy one of grudging mutual need, not strong affection. One day, Harp opened the corral gate, then rode up to the cabin.
Horse is coming. Better start fixing dinner.
Geneva felt a sudden excitement and ran outside.
Could Donnelly be with them?
He ain't the only one does business around here.
Geneva hurried toward the corrals. Emmy caught up with her.
We better move back to the cabin. We wouldn't want to spook the horses away from the gate. If it's Donnelly, you'll see him soon enough. And you better hope he's glad to see you. When things go against his grain, he can scare a grizzly bear to death.
That was a side of him Geneva had rarely seen, though she knew he could be provoked to extreme reaction if the offense against him was strong enough. He had shown no remorse over shooting Cletus Slocum, though he grieved about having to shoot the crippled roan. His only other expressed regret was that he hadn't been able to shoot the rest of the brothers and make a clean sweep of them. She saw one rider take a position just past the gate to haze a dozen horses through. Two more men brought up the rear, pushing the remuda. The nearest man was dark, wearing a beaded vest. He wore a broad-brimmed hat with an eagle feather in his leather band. She thought he was probably an Indian. Watching the other two through the curtain of dust, she realized neither was Donnelly. One was black, the other was white, a man in his 30s, sitting ramrod straight in the saddle.
I don't know the darkie. The white one's Curly Tadlock. You better watch out for him. He's as handsome as a new pair of boots and as slick as owl grease with the ladies. Don't give him so much as a wink or he'll drag you to the haystack behind the barn.
Geneva couldn't help but smile.
You've been there?
Once. I was weak and I reckon he was desperate. Anyway, he's good looking.
What did Quincy say?
Quincy doesn't say anything to Curly. He knows Curly'd clean his plow. And he knows I'd crown him with a skillet if he got high-handed with me. Donnelly was awful mad about it, though. He's like a holy roller preacher when it comes to the he and she stuff.
I'm not interested in Tadlock, or any other man but my husband.
Then you better make that plain to him right off. I'll bet a dollar Curly makes a move at you before he ever sits down to dinner. He tries every woman that ain't old and ugly.
Once the driven horses were inside the corral, the Indian led his mount through and closed the gate.
We call him Chief because none of us can pronounce his real name. He's pretty handy at gathering up Indian horses.
But he's an Indian himself.
A Tonkawa. They're friendly to the whites and enemies to the other tribes. His bunch almost got wiped out a while back when the Comanches and some others made a raid on them. Slaughtered men, women, and young'uns like cattle.
I thought Indians just killed white people.
There's been more Indians killed by other Indians than was ever killed by white folks. Or white folks killed by Indians, for that matter. Chief hates all tribes except his own. Taking their horses is his way of getting even. He don't look at it as stealing.
I suppose he would call it an act of war.
Yeah, but he don't mind taking money for it. Indians have found out what a dollar is worth. They don't work for beads anymore.
Harp walked up to the Indian.
Ain't many horses for all the time you've been out.
The Indian frowned back, a hard look in his eyes.
You know, like, you go yourself.
Harp held up both hands defensively. He was obviously afraid of the Indian.
Well, no offense, man. Just noticing, that's all.
Tadlock dismounted and tied his horse outside the corral.
This ain't much to show for the risk. We had to outrun some awful mad Indians to get even this many.
Looks like we may have to move the operation.
Yeah, country's getting settled up to where you can't ride 10 miles anymore without somebody coming to see what you're up to.
Harp jerked his head toward the black man, still in the saddle and watching the horses across the fence.
Where'd you get him? You know it's risky to bring strangers here.
He showed up where we were camped. He was looking for something to eat, and we needed help with the horses.
Harp looked eastward, his eyes worried.
You sure none of them Indians followed you?
They ran into soldiers taking some breakouts back to the reservation. That's as far as they got.
Maybe Donnelly will come in with a bigger string.
And not if he runs into the kind of trouble we had. Those Indians bayed after us like a pack of bloodhounds.
Curly seemed to notice Geneva for the first time. A broad smile broke across his face, the teeth a bright white against his dusty stubble. He ambled across the yard to the two women.
Well, now, the scenery's picked up considerable all of a sudden. Who is this beautiful lady?
She's Donnelly's wife, and I hadn't noticed her being beautiful. Mostly she's been a nuisance.
I'm surprised that Donnelly sent for her to come up here.
He didn't. She came on her own. Damn fool thing to do, if you ask me.
I don't believe I did ask you.
Tadlock removed his hat as he approached Geneva. Long, curly hair spilled down over his forehead.
Ma'am, I'm known in these parts as Curly Tadlock. I'd be pleased to know your name.
She wondered if that was the name he was known by in other places.
She recalled Emmy's admonition.
You may call me Mrs. Bannister.
Why is it that the best-looking ones are always Mrs.? It's like running up against a locked door. But most doors have a key, if the right man knows how to find it.
Harp looked from one to the other in confusion.
Well, hey, what's this about keys now? There ain't no keys around here, nor locks neither.
Some locks can't be seen, but a man of experience can find a way to open them.
Even as she mentally rejected him, Geneva was physically stirred by Tadlock's boldness. She sensed that she needed to stay as far away from him as possible, but it would be difficult in close quarters. She hoped Donnelly would get here soon.
Come on, Geneva. We need to fix dinner for the working man.
The women walked toward the house.
Like I warned you, he's already made a move. Watch that you don't let that smile and slick talk get you. Your husband ain't one for sharing what belongs to him. Somebody could get hurt.
I won't give Tadlock any encouragement.
He's already got that. Seeing you was enough to touch him off.
While the biscuits browned, Geneva started to set the table.
That's enough. The Indian and the darkie ain't eating with the rest. They'll take their dinner outside.
They've all been working together, haven't they?
Well, that's different from eating together. Work's one thing, social life is something else.
Emmy took the biscuits from the oven, almost dropping them as the hot pan burned her fingers.
Ow! Damn, that's hot! Say, how'd you come to meet Donnelly in the first place?
He stopped by our place in Aerith County while he was on a horse-buying trip.
Are you sure he was buying them?
The men started to file in to fill their plates. The black man finally turned so Geneva was able to see his face. Recognition gave her a light shock. This was the soldier who had ventured into camp early in her trip. Joshua Hamlin still wore the shirt and trousers she gave him to replace the uniform that would have identified him.
Mr. Hamlin.
Open-mouthed in surprise, he touched fingers to a floppy old hat he'd picked up somewhere.
Ma'am? Looks like we've been traveling the same road.
You know him?
We crossed trails some days ago. I gave him something to eat.
It's a bad habit, feeding strays. They take to following you. Are you sure he didn't?
Nobody followed me.
Hamlin and the Indian filled their plates and carried them outside. Harp had eaten a large breakfast, but he heaped his plate with all the food it would support. He and Tadlock hunched at the table together. Midway through the meal, Harp came up for breath.
Oh, I still don't like it, Curly. You're bringing that darkie here. First time a lawman questions him, he's gonna spill all he knows.
Don't worry about it. As soon as we're through with him, well...
Geneva was stunned. She knew she'd not been meant to hear that. Donnelly wouldn't be a party to such treachery, using a man's labor, then disposing of him like a worn-out boot. But he might not get here in time to stop it. She wondered if she should talk to Emmy about this. The woman gave no sign that she had heard, or perhaps she had, but chose not to acknowledge it. Likeable though she might be, she was hardly an innocent party here.
And I won't be either if I stay long.
Geneva decided to take a chance and speak to Tadlock.
You wouldn't really kill him, would you?
Well, the world ain't gonna miss him. There's too many of them as it is. Besides, we can't have him talking about us.
But he won't. The fact is that he's running from the law.
How do you know?
He told me he killed a man.
What?
As far as I know.
All the worse. Him being black, they're probably looking high and low for him. They'd hang him, but not until he told everything he knows. Since he's going to die anyway, I don't see nothing wrong with us rushing it a little.
Tadlock turned away from her, a signal that the subject was closed. After eating, Harp and Tadlock took a nap on the floor. The Indian and Hamlin rested a while on the porch, then went back to the corrals. There they sorted through the horses, saddling them one at a time and trying them. The Indian did much of the riding. A few pitched, but he stuck like a cocklebur. The horses gave up before he did. Geneva watched Hamlin. He rode several horses while the chief rested. One managed to pitch him off. He climbed back into the saddle. Hamlin got down only when the horse had worn itself out. Tadlock had finished his nap and was watching over the fence.
That's enough, boy. We'll work him another round in the morning. Then we'll pay you off and let you go on your way.
Geneva shuddered. The sergeant wiped sweat onto his shirt sleeve and walked toward the cistern beside the house. Geneva waited until she felt confident no one was paying attention, then moved close to him.
Ma'am, I sure was surprised when I seen you this morning. I want to thank you again for your help. I was pretty near done in.
I've come to help you a little more. You've got to slip away from here the first chance you get. Travel as fast and as far from this place as you can.
The sergeant appeared startled.
They fixing to run me into the law?
Worse than that. They intend to kill you. You've fallen into a den of thieves. They're afraid you'll tell what you know about them.
I don't know much to tell. Mr. Tadlock promised to pay me $20 to help him with his horses. Took me a while to figure out they were stolen.
Don't sell your life for $20. Get away.
Yes, reckon I better. I hope you won't get in any trouble over this.
They won't know I told you.
God's blessing on you, ma'am.
He started to turn away and then hesitated.
Since you had a warning for me, I got one for you. I heard Mr. Tadlock making bad talk about you to that Indian. He don't mean you no good.
She nodded solemnly.
I know.
When Emmy called that supper was ready, three men responded.
Where's that darkie? Didn't you tell him supper's ready?
No, and I ain't going out after him. He ought to know when it's time to eat.
The Indian took his plate onto the porch. Harp and Tadlock seated themselves at the table without waiting for Geneva and Emmy.
Bring that coffee over here.
It's on the stove. Get it yourself. I ain't no waitress.
Harp got up and filled his cup at the stove.
Oh, women these days have got it too easy. Not like my old mother. When Pappy spoke, she jumped.
Emmy, would you mind bringing us a coffee, please?
I'd be tickled to.
After she poured coffee for him, Tadlock turned to Harp.
There's women even talking about wanting to vote. They don't know a damn thing about politics.
What with uppity women and high taxes and darkies free to do whatever they want to, the world is sliding straight down to hell. It's harder and harder for an honest working man.
Geneva and Emmy exchanged glances.
What would you know about honest working men?
Emmy stepped to the door.
Chief, I wish you'd go tell that darkie to come get his supper before it's all cold. I ain't cooking twice.
The Indian returned after a time.
Don't see him.
Chief, go take another look.
Probably laid up someplace asleep. It's hard to get a decent day's work out of them people.
Tadlock's eyes showed concern.
Maybe he's run off.
How come? You think something spooked him?
It don't take much to do it.
Horse gone. He gone.
We better track him down.
It's coming on dark. Looks like rain, too. By morning, it'll be long gone.
Facing Harp, Tadlock clenched a fist.
Are you sure you didn't say something to scare him away?
I never spoke six words to him since he came here.
Both men turned toward Geneva.
When would I have had a chance to say anything?
Emmy motioned with a cast-iron lid lifter from the stove.
Nobody had to say anything. You two had murder in your eyes, plain as if you'd wrote him a letter. Don't you be laying the blame on Geneva.
Blame ain't all I'd like to be laying on her.
Watch your mouth! She's a lady. You'll have to pardon Quincy for his poor upbringing. He grew up in a cow lot.
She knew his smile was false, meant to reassure her. She saw something ugly in his eyes.
The soldier was right about him. It's time Donnelly got here.
Andy had spent a miserable night in the rain. He unpacked the mule the evening before and spread his tarp between two bushes, trying to simulate a tent. But he was wet in spite of that. Now it was morning, and he shook with a chill. He had gathered dry wood before the rain started, managing to keep it fairly dry through the night, while he sat cramped beneath the tarp, covering himself the best he could with the slicker. He built a fire and made coffee while he tried to warm up. Geneva Bannister's trail simply disappeared. Too many wagon and hoof tracks crossed after her passage, covering up those left by her buggy. He had cut a zigzag pattern back and forth, covering many miles over several days, hoping in vain to find where she got off to. He visited several ranches and cow camps, inquiring if anyone had seen her. Now he feared the rain had obliterated whatever sign she might have left. Somewhere to the north lay an army outpost where he might be able to send a wire back to headquarters. He dreaded having to admit that he had spent so much time and traveled so far on a failed search. He was aware that many ranger missions came up dry, but those were other men's, not his. Andy vaguely remembered this area from his long-ago time with the Indians. But settlement had brought wagon roads, a haphazard scattering of ranches, even a few small villages. Some he knew about, many he didn't. Landmarks were limited. To the east lay Indian Territory and its tribal reservations. To the west stretched the far-reaching Llano Estacado. He was east of the escarpments on a hilly, often sandy, thinly wooded area known as the Cross Timbers. Geneva and Donley Bannister could be anywhere in this vast, thinly settled region. Much of it was only sketchily documented so far. Some recent maps still left it largely blank except for one word printed across it, Comanche. Less than a decade had passed since the horseback tribes had been driven from it. He finished the little that passed for breakfast. The clouds were breaking off. Morning sunshine pierced them here, there, and yonder. He decided to let his bedding and tarp dry out rather than pack them wet. He spread them on bushes to give them air and sunshine. The site resembled a careless nester's camp, he thought, but who was to see it besides himself? After a time, somebody did. Half a dozen horsemen topped over a hill to the west, paused there, then moved in his direction. His first thought was of Indians. He wasn't alarmed. They should give him no trouble unless they came shooting without allowing him a chance to talk. The few who ventured into this region anymore were usually harmless hunting parties, sadly doomed to failure like the one he encountered several days ago. Occasionally they had a military escort. More often they were off the reservation illegally. He discerned that these were white men. He knew of no one who might have reason for hostility toward him, except perhaps Bannister. He raised his right hand to demonstrate friendly intention. The riders came close. He saw no friendliness, however, in a man with a fierce black beard who pushed out a little ahead of the rest. He carried a rifle across his lap. The rider gave Andy a challenging study with bullet gray eyes beneath heavy brows black as pitch.
Who are you, sir? Give an accounting of yourself.
All the men were well armed. Andy could see that they were not merely ranch hands out on a cow hunt.
My name is Andy Pickard, and I'm waiting for my bedding to dry.
But why are you here? What is your business?
His manner aroused a flare of defiance in Andy.
Maybe I'd better ask about yours. How come all the questions?
The man shifted the rifle slightly toward Andy.
I am J. Farrell Vanderpool. My ranch is north of here. These men and I have been on the trail of horse thieves. In the absence of information to the contrary, we must suspect that you may be one of them.
Andy knew the name. Ben Danforth had told him about Vanderpool and his lethal campaign against thieves. He could see that these men were deadly serious. Stalling them could be hazardous. Though he had been coached to say no more than necessary about whatever mission he was on, except to fellow lawmen, he felt it best to share some information.
I'm a ranger. I'm on the hunt for a fugitive.
He opened his jacket to show his badge. Most of the larger plains ranches were financed by English and Scottish investors and by Eastern banks. The man who faced him had the look of a Chicago or St. Louis banker, sent out here to manage investments for speculators, hoping to cash in on what was being called the beef bonanza. Vanderpool studied Andy a minute longer.
Who's the fugitive you're after? Perhaps one of us knows something of him.
Donley Bannister. I had him in sight once, but his horse outran mine.
We're familiar with the name.
Andy explained that he'd been trailing Bannister's wife in hope she would lead him to her husband.
I lost track of her some days ago. I don't suppose any of you have come across a woman traveling by herself in a buggy?
Vanderpool looked to the other riders. No one had anything to contribute.
Well, I'm sorry. However...
He turned in the saddle.
Bring that boy up here.
Andy had not noticed a black rider who remained behind the others. Recognition jolted him. This was the army sergeant accused of killing a man in Santa Angela. Andy struggled to remember the name. Hamlin, that was it. Joshua Hamlin.
We came across this boy yesterday. He said he was running away from some horse thieves who intended to kill him. He's been trying to take us to their camp, but has had trouble finding his bearings.
Andy saw that Hamlin no longer wore the uniform. His clothing hung loosely, at least a size too large. His horse was a sorrel, not the brown he'd been riding when Andy saw him making his escape.
Do you remember me, soldier?
The reluctant sergeant nodded.
Yes, sir. You're the ranger that throwed me in jail.
Vanderpool seemed intrigued.
How is it that you know this boy?
He's a soldier at Fort Concho, or was. Shot a man and lit out running.
I took him perhaps to be a thief, but I didn't take him for a killer.
The man he killed had murdered a soldier. I reckon he deserved what he got.
And he turned back to the sergeant.
How'd you come to get mixed up with horse thieves?
I didn't know they was at first. They offered me $20 to help them drive some horses they said they had bought. Then this lady come to me and said they figured to kill me when they didn't need me no more. They was afraid I'd talk to the law.
What lady?
They call her Miss Bannister. That's all the name I heard.
Andy felt a surge of hope.
Was her husband with her?
No. They said he was coming with some more horses, but I didn't see him. I lit out when nobody was watching.
A grim smile crossed Vanderpool's face.
These thieves have been a plague to my neighbors and me for much too long. We'd welcome your company if you'd like to come along and help us, Ranger.
I'd be tickled to.
I rode all night long. It was cloudy, so I couldn't see the stars. Come morning, I was plumb lost. Still am.
Vanderpool turned to Andy.
We don't give a damn about some shooting that took place 200 miles from here. I'd like to hold on to this boy till he finds the thieves' camp for us.
He's yours till then. After that, he's my prisoner.
Vanderpool extended his hand.
Deal.
Andy reached back into his saddlebag and brought out a set of handcuffs. He thought better of it and put them back.
We'll trust you, Joshua, not to try and run away. To do it would just get you shot.
The sergeant's shoulders sagged.
I shot that man in self-defense. But when everything's done, they'll hang me, won't they?
I can't speak for a judge and jury.
They'll all be white. Sure they'll hang me.
You can cross that bridge when you get there. Right now, boy, let's find those horse thieves.
Geneva walked to the window and looked toward the corrals.
No use working yourself into a lather. Donnelly will show up in his own good time.
I wish he were here now.
Curly Tadlock's been after you again, ain't he?
Every chance he gets, he puts his hands on me. I pull away, but he keeps pushing.
He always did fancy himself as God's gift to women. He can't understand why they don't all see him like he sees himself. Your husband'll set him straight. Curly won't admit it, but he's afraid of him.
Then why does he keep making a try for me?
Because Donnelly's not here. Curly is one to get while the getting's good.
Geneva thought of Luther Fleet.
I'll shoot him if I have to. Not to kill him, but to put him in his place.
It'd be a service to womankind.
I don't understand Donnelly partnering with a man like that.
Emmy gave her a pitying look.
It's the money. Curly's good at what he does. He knows where to find horses and how to get away with them. Donnelly knows where and how to dispose of them for a good price. They don't like each other much, but as long as the partnership pays a profit, they'll act like they was born twins.
Tadlock and the Indian, mostly the Indian, rode the horses each day, giving special attention to those not yet well broken. Tadlock explained the reasoning.
We don't want some farmer throwed off on his head before we get all the horses sold. It's bad for business.
Harb did no riding. He usually sat on the fence, making critical comments about the other's horsemanship. The three came into the cabin for supper.
We could have got a few more days' work out of him, riding those horses.
I still wonder how come he left.
No telling. Them people are superstitious. You know, like Injuns.
Tadlock caught himself.
Yeah, all except the Tonks.
The Indian shrugged.
Yeah, the trouble is that he's apt to fall into the hands of the law. When he does, he's liable to bring him down on us like a thunderstorm.
Our business is drying up around here anyhow. It's time we quit this place for good.
Soon as Donnelly shows up, we'll throw his horses in with ease and leave here.
You'd abandon this camp?
It's been abandoned before. Look at it. Some windy day, this rickety cabin will fall in and hurt somebody.
Well, I'll admit it ain't much, but it's all the home I've got.
In our business, it don't pay to get attached to one place. A change of climate from time to time can be healthy.
He turned to Geneva with a sly grin.
Same thing goes for people. Sometimes it's good to change things around and have some variety. It keeps us from getting stale.
Geneva gave him a look of silent contempt. They saw the dust first, and Harp's voice trembled with nervousness.
What if it's a posse? That black boy could be fetching a hanging party here.
It's probably Donnelly bringing in a bunch of horses.
But what if it ain't?
Then we'll fight him off. Most posses break up pretty fast when they smell gunpowder.
Tadlock calmly took his rifle from the corner where he had placed it. Geneva's heart lifted at the thought that Donnelly might be coming. She would no longer have to put up with Tadlock's sleazy innuendos, his unwelcome hands taking every opportunity to touch her as if she were a lady of the line. She opened the cabin door.
Where do you think you're going?
To meet my husband.
Better be sure it's him before you run out there. If it ain't, You might take a bullet before they see that you're a woman.
She realized Tadlock was right to be cautious. Geneva retreated to where Emmy waited near the kitchen stove. Tadlock watched through the window.
Everything's all right. It's Donnelly.
He walked outside carrying the rifle. Geneva was close behind him. She couldn't see Donnelly's face, but she recognized him by the erect way he sat on his horse, as if he owned the world. A half-grown boy helped Donnelly push a small gathering of horses through the gate, then stepped down inside to close the gate. Donnelly dismounted outside the corral and tied his horse to the fence. Geneva began walking toward him, then moved into an eager trot. Donnelly turned, stiffening in surprise. He was too startled to respond as she threw her arms around him. He did not return her joyous kiss.
Geneva? What the hell are you doing here?
His angry reaction took her by surprise.
I wanted to be with you. I was afraid you couldn't come back to get me.
But I sent word that you wasn't to come. Don't you know it's dangerous up here?
She glanced back toward Tadlock, coming along with Harp and the Indian.
I didn't know how dangerous till I came.
Is that all the horses you could find? Hardly worth the time and trouble.
You don't know how much trouble. I was lucky to get away with these. Don't look like you got many more.
We had to shake off half the Indian nation. What's your excuse?
Ranchers. They think a lot of their horses. They got Speck and Chess. Damn near got me, too.
Tadlock pointed his thumb toward the boy in the corral.
Who's that? Where'd you get him?
Orphan boy. He's all right. He's been a help to me.
But he's apt to have a long memory. That's dangerous.
Geneva shuddered, remembering that Tadlock and Harp had planned to kill Hamlin when they were through with him. She feared they might decide upon the same treatment for this sandy-headed kid. He looked to be only 15 or 16, too young to realize what a dangerous situation he'd stumbled into.
Donnelly, we've got a lot to talk about.
We damn sure do. I thought you had more sense than to follow after me. Them Slocums could have trailed after you, or the law.
He spotted the buggy parked beside his shed.
You came in that? It leaves tracks a blind mule could follow.
Nobody followed me. I saw to that.
His reaction stung her like a lash.
I thought you'd be glad to see me.
Somewhere else, but this is the wrong place.
Everybody says no jury would convict you for killing Cletus Slocum. I want you to go back with me and give yourself up. A quick trial, then you won't need to run anymore.
You must be crazy if you think that's all there is to it. Ain't you figured out yet what we've been doing here?
I have, I'm sorry to say. But perhaps they don't know about it down there.
Even if the court turned me loose, I'd have the Slocum brothers waiting to shoot me in the back first chance they got. I doubt I could get them all.
We wouldn't have to stay there. We could go somewhere far away and make a new start.
Doing what? All I know is horses.
You could settle in one place and raise them honest.
A black horse can't change his color.
Donnelly turned his back on her and looked at Tadlock.
Curly! Climbing around here has turned hotter than hell's hinges. We gotta quit this place.
I already decided on that. Just been waiting for you to come in.
Tadlock's expression turned dark.
You think somebody's on your trail?
Nobody I've seen, but I feel it in my bones. Every time I look back over my shoulder, my hair starts to raise up. Soon as we get some dinner, we'll take all these horses and head west.
Tadlock cast another glance into the corral.
With such a piddling few, there won't be much money to split.
In this kind of business, there always comes a time when your luck goes cold. You pick up what chips you got left and run like the devil's after you. Chances are that he is.
Donnelly beckoned the boy.
Come on, kid, let's get something to eat. Don't unsaddle your horse.
Emmy was not keen about leaving.
It ain't much, but it's got four walls and a roof.
So's a jailhouse. Besides, what'd you do here without menfolk to take care of you?
Better than I've done with some I could name.
Then stay here. There ain't nobody cares.